Welcome to Master the Start, a podcast for young professionals where we interview business experts on how you can master the start of your life in business.
That was my coffee cup, which means I'm super excited for the Master the Start podcast this week. Cool opening, right? Anyways, welcome back to the Master the Start podcast. We have a heck of a guy on the show today, John Rasmussen. He is an absolute beast when it comes to managing people. Let me give you his background quick. John Rasmussen is an executive vice president at Wells Fargo's personal lending group. This means he serves the financial needs of more than 3 million customers with a combined asset value of more than $23 billion. That's a lot of money. In this function, Rasmussen is head of Wells Fargo's Education Financial Services, America's second largest provider of private student loans. And he's also head of personal lines and loans, where he is responsible for not only sales, but also operations, quality, compliance, and support functions. He's held senior leadership roles with various nationwide mortgage lenders, such as Bank of America, GMAC, and Prudential Home Mortgage. As I said at the beginning, this guy is an expert at managing people. If you ever want to be a manager someday, or if you want to take the position of a high leadership role, you need to listen to this podcast. He will give you advice on how to manage people, and he will give you lessons that you can add to your life today, this minute, right now, to be more successful and get to that upper management position. So I hope you love this podcast as much as me. I will talk to you after the show. Okay, so to this point, what is the greatest moment in your professional career? Can you kind of like let our audience experience that moment a little bit?
Sure. You know, it's as I think about that, Bobby, I don't know if I have like this one like sort of magical moment that your audience would say, wow, that was really cool. So here's what I would say. As I think back in my career, I would go first management job. Can you believe that? So not like the big job, but the first one. Do you know why?
No.
So, here's why for your audience. I would predict for most young people, here's how it happened for me and most everybody else that I know. The first management job is the hardest one to get. And if you think about it, why is it the hardest one to get? It's because somebody is going to have to trust you, and you've never done this before. So it's not like we can, on our first job, go, well, here's the previous management experience I have. And what'll happen is, the other thing that's tough about it is, 9 times out of 10, the first management job we get, it'll be managing peers. And that's what happened to me. So I was in the mortgage business, within a team, and we were growing. And sure enough, we started to grow. Then we needed to add managers to bring the scale. So all of a sudden, people that I was sitting next to working as coworkers, the next day I'm their boss. So I had a mentor, an older brother who was 6 years older than me. He knew I wanted to go into management. I wanted to be involved in decision making. He told me, he said, John, day one, think like the manager. Right? And I sort of understood that. And I said, well, tell me more about that. He goes, here's what's going to happen. Someone's going to give you your first chance to manage, and they're going to be watching. Well, how do you interact with the people sitting next to you? How do you support the policies and the practices of the company? So, for example, when I say act like the manager, well, you know how this works. It works in everyday life around us. It's how am I talking about them? Am I complimentary? Am I negative about my coworkers? Am I critiquing some and friends with others and doing that whole thing? Or it could be maybe a policy of the company. Am I griping about the policy? Am I supportive about the policy? Because people are watching, your existing manager's watching to see, if I got to promote somebody out of these 10 people, who would it be? It's not going to be the person who you can visibly see, well, they're good with some, not with others. They tend to not be that supportive of people they're working around, or they don't seem to have the support of the policies of the company. So for me, I became a manager by the time I was 25, 26 years old, about your age. But it was little things. I was working downtown Minneapolis. So young people working downtown Minneapolis, Thursday night, what do they like to do?
Like to go out.
Like to go out. So I would go out. I wasn't married at the time. But I was really careful about what conversations I would have. 6, 7 o'clock, I was going home. Nothing good was going to happen on conversations after 7, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. No way. So I just refused because I acted as a coworker as if someday I was going to be those people's bosses. And I just acted that way. And then someone gave me a chance. Then my boss saw, okay, I see how John interacts. I see how he supports the company policies and practices. I'll give him a shot. And that then was the start of everything else. And that's why it's so critical. And then for your viewers and listeners, you know, I hear young people want that desire and then get a little bit frustrated. Why aren't I getting the opportunity? I would just ask everybody to assess, are they doing their part? Are they acting like the manager? So that's the insight. I was so happy. I remember the time, the exact day when it happened. And then from there, it just sort of took off from there.
That's awesome. I love that. I love that way of thinking about things. Okay, well then let's turn it around a little bit. And can you explain really the toughest low point in your career?
Yeah, I've been fortunate. I don't think I've had like a lot of low points. Hopefully you can tell from me I'm optimistic. But I will share a story with your audience. It was a decision that I had to make. I was probably into the workforce about 10 years. I was married at the time. You know my kids, so my kids were 6, 4, and 2 at the time. My wife, Nancy, is a periodontist. She was practicing. And I had an opportunity to join a different company, relocate to Detroit, Michigan. I was living in Minneapolis at the time. So imagine that, married, my wife was practicing periodontist, 3 kids, 6, 4, and 2. And I say, do I switch companies and move to Detroit? So Nance and I, you know, we talked about it and we said, let's go for it. So I remember this, Bobby, vividly, getting on a plane. I was going to go over and start working probably for 3 or 4 months while things kind of wrapped up in Minneapolis. And then everyone else was going to relocate over. It was a Sunday night. It was raining. My flight was delayed. I flew into Detroit. They had a temporary living apartment for me. And I remember laying in bed. I was looking up at the ceiling and I was going, what did I do? Because this wasn't just about me taking a job across the street or a different department. It was like I was going, I couldn't turn back at that point. The lesson here that I like to share with people is, and that was probably some of my biggest learning. I was so uncomfortable. I was even questioning myself, am I up for this? Can I do this? That was my first job that I had the keys to the P&L, right? The total responsibility for the business. That's why I took the job. And it was going to be a stretch. It was kind of like the first management job. Well, someone will give you the first management job. Then someone's going to say, well, can you manage managers or can you lead managers? And at some point in time, someone's going to say, can you run a P&L? Can you be the person responsible for the profit and loss for the division or the group, whatever that is? Well, this was my chance to run the division, to be responsible for the P&L for this company. So the message here is biggest learnings, biggest growth always come from getting uncomfortable. So it should be a balance. So I always say you should be prepared for it. So don't do crazy things, but never let the apprehension hold you back. And I see that happening with people. It's like they want something, but it's like, they're scared to do it. And I always say, it's perfectly okay to be scared. I just told you, I'm laying in bed going, what in the world am I doing? No one knew that. When I came in the office on Monday, new group, new company, No one knew I was laying in bed the night before going, oh, what did I just do? And then you just figure it out. So I encourage young people, especially early in their career, as soon as things get comfortable, then look to move inside the company, do new experiences, get involved in different ways. I also went and got my MBA while I was working. I got it at St. Thomas, by the way. So there again, when things are slowing down, I'm like, okay, I'll go back to school while I'm working. And just do new things, get uncomfortable. That's where the big learning comes from.
Okay. It's going to be valuable for people. I like that. Okay. Well, I don't know. You don't seem like someone that has a lot of do-overs you want to have, but we're going to ask you anyways. If you had one do-over in your early 20s, what would it be and what would you do differently?
Right. You guessed it right. I don't know if it's a do-over, but there is something that I've learned, I would say, in the last 15 years that I know now, boy, that I wish I knew in my 20s. And that is a greater self-awareness. Now, I'm a big strength finders, if you know the Gallup strength finders. So what I would suggest for young people, I know I do for my kids, is I'm a strong believer that those who are most self-aware have the best opportunity to achieve their full potential. And I had some self-awareness in my 20s, not nearly like I've developed over the last 15 years. So I wish I could turn back the clock and go, oh, if only I would have started on that when I was 20, 21, 22, 25. So everybody out there that's listening, I would just Google it, go Strength Finders by Gallup. I think it's $25. Take the assessment. There's a book out there. It is one tool. It's a really good tool that defines it. Really, what I always say, it defines why we feel the way we feel, why we think the way we think, and why we act the way we act. It puts us under control. Because there's a bunch of stuff out there all of us are going to deal with every day. We can't control that, but we can control how we respond to it. Why do I feel frustrated? Why do I feel excited? Why do I get angry about something? It puts us in control of that.
So can you give me an example? Because I know my brother brought up that when he visited you, you were talking to him about your strengths. Yep. And how you try to make it very visible what your strengths are when you're working with someone on a project so they don't get turned off by your strengths or your weaknesses. How do you do that?
Yeah, so my number one strength is maximizer. So here's what that means in practicality. I have like a disease, Bobby, that almost everything I can experience or see, I could see how it could get better or how it could be better. If you think about that, think how annoying that could be, right? So in my role, I don't really do any real work. I lead, do this, I'm kind of joking, but there's a bunch of stuff that people come and give updates. Hey, John, we're doing this. Here's an update on this strategy. What do you think of this? And everything that someone would bring, I could always see something that could be better. And what I've learned over the years is two things. Some things are just good enough. And my feedback is just going to be marginally better. And it's really not going to add any more value. So I just go, sounds great, Bobby. Great job. Get it done. And then you feel great about it. I know I could have tweaked it on the margin because that feels good to me. I'm good at it. Would have made it a little bit better, but not in a material way. Because that ends up becoming about me, not you. So if I do that and you come in and go, because then you're going back to your team. Hey, I gave John an update. Thumbs up. He didn't give us any different direction. Run with it. You're going to feel great. Your team's going to feel great. Now sometimes you're going to bring something to me. And it's going to, hey, there is some things that need to get tweaked. And what I always do is I always acknowledge the foundational work that's been done because I'm not very good with a blank sheet of paper. So it's based on your ideas that I see something that could enhance it. I just name it. So it'd be Bobby. Great work here. There's one or two things that I think we should consider. Let's do it this way. And I acknowledge, and then you know me well enough that that's my maximizer. So if we work together long enough, you're going to know that about me. My team schedules maximizing sessions with me, where they come in and give me free rein, John, maximize away. But when people don't work with me that much, I just name it. Without this, I wouldn't have this next idea. Then you come back and you go, hey, that felt good. If I don't name that, do you know what happens? You go, well, why didn't he tell me that's what he wanted in the first place? And that little bit of difference from a leadership perspective changes the whole experience. So that's one way I've learned through the years about how to be more effective. There's probably not a day that goes by that I'm not consciously thinking about my strengths and how they're playing out and how I'm absorbing things that are coming at me, both professionally and personally.
That's awesome. We will definitely link that strengths finder in the show notes so people can check that out. Now I'm really worried about question number 4 because you've had no do-overs. You don't have anything, any point where you were closest to giving up. But now I got to ask you about a regret. If you were to die tomorrow, is there anything you wish you would have done?
Well, this is going to sound like I have no regrets. I've never made any mistakes. I have. I really have. I'm no different than anybody else when it comes to that. I'll tell you, though, here's what I try to do. I've always tried to live in the moment and appreciate what I had at that time. I talk to a lot of young people, and I see people stressed about things that either they wish they had or about the future. And I'm just like, think about today. Just appreciate and value today. And the other thing I suggest to people, don't let anything go unsaid. So if there's something in a relationship or something going on, address it. Don't let anything go unsaid. You know, someone gave me that advice several years ago. I try to hold true to it. So if this were to end for John Rasmussen today, right in the middle of this video or right after this video, would there be anything that I wish I would have told somebody? And I think for the most part, I think I'm pretty good. I'm pretty square with the world.
That's so awesome.
Just guidance to live by, I guess.
All right. Last one then. What is one life hack that our listeners could kind of apply to their life this week to either be a little happier, maybe a little more successful down the road? What do you think?
I have two things, Zach. Can I do two?
Of course.
I'm gonna do two, but they're for our different audiences.
Okay.
So I would say for those that are graduated from college and are out starting to work, maybe like yourself and your wife, Bobby, here's what I would say. Invest and save early. The best invention I think ever created is compound interest. So, and you got to start early and you have the advantage when you're young. Here's the example I'll give your audience. I'll use you and your brother, Michael, as an example. So let's say you, because you're the good brother, and then you listen, you're out of school, you're about 25 now, I think, right? And then you start, you go, okay, I get this, so I'm gonna save $1,000 a month. That might seem like a lot now, but just to use it as an example, I'm gonna save $1,000 a month. I'm gonna do that for the next 40 years until I'm 65. How much money would you have? Do you wanna guess?
$1,000.
$12,000.
I bet. Oh my gosh, we'd be at like a $1.3 million or something. I have no idea. I can't do the math that quick.
You'd have about $3.5 million.
Jeez.
$3.5 million. Now, your brother Michael, he graduates from college. He gets to be 25. But, you know, he's not going to start putting money away. He's got other plans. He wants to drive this car. He wants to move in a little nicer apartment. He thinks he's got all kinds of time to save. And he sort of does. So he makes a different decision. He doesn't put $1,000 a month away until he wakes up one morning when he's 35. He goes, oh, I better start saving some money. So he starts to do the same thing, $1,000 a month, and he does it for 30 years. So how much will Michael have when he turns 65? So when he's 65, You have 3.5 million. How much does Michael have? About $1.5 million.
$1.5 million.
So $2 million. So $2 million is what that difference is of doing that different decision back in that first 10 years. That would be my, I guess, what do you call it, life hack. Then the other thing I would say for kids in college. This is going to sound a little bit like, okay, there goes John Rasmussen sort of lecturing college kids. Here's what I would say. Watch the partying, the drinking and everything else that goes along with that. It's not worth it. Or at least you got to moderate. There's no upside to it. What you're going to find when the college kids get out in the workplace, it's not acceptable anyway. So it's going to have to change at some time. So that would be the other thing that I would just encourage people to think about. If you're hitting it pretty hard, it's going to catch up with you somehow.
I love it. Love it. I couldn't agree more with both hacks. That pretty much sums it up. And we're so thankful that you could join us today.
Well, thanks for putting the platform together. You know, you're providing this platform and you're connecting with a bunch of different people who are willing to share their experiences. There are all kinds of people like us out there. Young people, don't go at it by yourself. There's no need to. I didn't. I had people that I relied on. So that'd be the last thing.
That's awesome. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Okay. A quick closing. Number one, thank you so much for listening to the Master of the Start podcast. Like always, we really appreciate it. If you enjoyed this episode as much as we did, I mean, that would be insane because I personally love John Rasmussen in this episode. Anyways, if you do love it as much as we do, please leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or whatever podcast platform you use. Also, feel free to visit our site at gomahi.com/podcast for additional show notes. And most importantly, you can vote on that question that you want us to ask our guests next week. So do it. Some reminders quick about John Rasmussen and what he had to say. Number one, even if you are at an entry-level position, make sure you always act and work like a manager. This will put your career on the fast track, so do it. Number two, as John mentioned, start to save and invest your money ASAP. Also, another little tidbit he threw in there is if you are in college, party in moderation. As he said, you can have fun. Have as much fun as you want, but don't overdo it because it will really save you from having to deal with consequences in the future. Lastly, you could hear and really see that John is a huge proponent of self-awareness. Take his life hack and make sure you do it this week. Take the Gallup StrengthsFinder test and think about how and why you act the way you do. So that really sums it up. We appreciate you being here. We're so happy to have you, and we can't wait to see you next week. Adios.